Haramai, good morning. This is Judith Leigh welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. Well, love is quite definitely in the air on today's programme, and not just because it's Valentine's Day tomorrow, although there will be a billion Valentine's Day cards exchanged. But even this needs to be handled with care. In these days of easy electronic communication, sending Valentine's greetings around the world has never been easier. But beware, in the UK, Valentine's Day tends to be about romantic relationships. But in America, it seems that people send Valentine's Day cards to pretty much anyone. It's easy to see how this can lead to unfortunate transatlantic misunderstandings, with casual connections and affectionate acquaintances being mistaken for amorous associations and passionate partnerships. But no such confusion here. Later in the programme, I've a beautiful and very moving love story for you. But first, I thought we might explore the story behind the day that provokes such romantic activity. It seems that the first official St. Valentine's Day was on the 14th of February in the year 496, by order of Pope Gelasius, in memory of a 3rd century priest who'd been put to death in Rome. But it's not known for sure whether Pope Gelasius was honouring this 3rd century priest, or whether it was one of two other priests martyred on the 14th of February in other years. But nothing further is known about these two other St. Valentines. It's the priest in Rome that has become the most widely acclaimed of the three. But why was a 3rd century Roman priest put to death? In his prison cell, awaiting execution, Valentine reflects on his past.
The year is 269 AD. How much time have I got left? I'm sitting in a cold, damp cell, waiting for an executioner. My crime? Marrying couples. Yes, you heard me. Absurd, isn't it? See, our emperor had a strange idea that if soldiers were single, they'd be more likely to sign up with the Roman army. So marriage was banned. Stupid idea. That's what I thought. That rule was meant to be broken. So I started to wed couples in secret. I knew I'd be discovered at some point. But I've brought happiness into people's lives. That's what a priest does, isn't it? Spread a bit of love and hope in the world. I just have to remember what first inspired me. That line in the Bible that says that if I have no love, I'm nothing. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. My name is Valentine, and this is my story.
Bishop Valentine was ultimately beheaded, but not before he had fallen in love with the jailer's daughter.
I can't believe it. They took Valentine away today. They took him. He's gone. They've taken him to the city square. He's been sentenced to death, and for what? Marrying couples? What sort of crime is that? All he did was try to bring some good into this world. Why did this have to happen? Why? He just wanted to spread the word of love and give people hope. It's just amazing what he did. This man, this priest, Valentine. He went against the law just to give people some happiness in their life. And now his life has been cut short. I remember when we were sitting together. He looked at me through the bars of his prison cell and told me what he believed. He said, three things will last forever. Faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is love. He left me a letter and signed it. From your Valentine.
So, if we're fortunate enough to get a Valentine's card, or maybe even a gift, perhaps we could also spare a thought for that 3rd century priest who believed that helping couples make a commitment to each other in marriage was so important that he was prepared to defy the law of the day, even though he knew it would end, as it did, in his own death. Such love, the gentle sound of the Jane Lilly Singers. And from the story of St. Valentine to another very different love story. On last week's programme, I was talking with two visitors from the Leprosy Mission in the UK, One of them was Louise Timmins, head of fundraising at the charity. When we were chatting afterwards, I realised there was another story to be told, not directly about the work of the Leprosy Mission, although it has its roots in Louise's many years of working with the charity. So now let's welcome back Louise Timmins with a beautiful story of love, trust, patience and the power of prayer. And a Nepalese baby girl called Marika and a little boy called Finn.
Today I'd like to just share a real story of God's faithfulness with you in my 12-year wait to become a mum. And I was thinking about this last Sunday at church, a famous song, How Great Thou Art by Stuart Hine. And whenever I hear that verse, when through the woods and forest glades I wander and hear the birds sing sweetly in the trees, when I look down from lofty mountain grandeur and hear the brook and feel the gentle breeze, I close my eyes and I'm transported back to 2011, and I'm holding my much longed for baby girl in my arms, singing these words like a lullaby to her. We're standing in the glory of God's creation on the top of the world at Anandaban Hospital. We're in Kathmandu in Nepal, an absolutely amazing country and one of the countries that the Leprosy Mission works in and where I have worked for many years in my 17-year career at the Leprosy Mission.
So tell us the background. Had you taken your daughter there?
No, we adopted her from Kathmandu. It's an amazing story. So there we were in 2011 after a 12-year wait for a child and a promise from God fulfilled. We adopted our tiny little girl from an orphanage just outside of Kathmandu. She was tiny and malnourished and really desperate for love. It was a 6-year wait to get her. We didn't know we were going to get her till actually a week before we actually did. So it was a very long wait. Jumping through many different hoops with many different money-making operations on both sides of the sea. But yeah, finally in 2011 we went to meet her, and our first month together was spent at Anandaban Hospital, which is such a special place, and it was so wonderful to see how the doctors tended to her lovingly, as they do to the patients affected by leprosy, and they really made us feel part of the family. My first visit to Anandaban actually was back in 2009 when my husband Paul and I led the Leprosy Mission trek to raise money for my job at Anandaban. And we spent so much time shadowing the staff and seeing how gracious they were with patients and hearing all of the stories of you know, rejection and loss and the things that they'd had to face because they had leprosy. And it really, you know, laid Nepal on our hearts as somewhere that, you know, we really felt that we could make a difference. So that's why we pursued international adoption.
There must have been times that you needed to remind yourself that God's hand was on this, because 6 years is a long time. Must have taken a big emotional strain and stress on you and your husband.
Yeah, it really did. And that's such a good point about God's hand being on it. I mean, when we got through all of the adoption procedures and we were granted permission, etc., and we thought everything was going to happen, I painted a whole nursery and bought all of the equipment. Now, when you bear in mind that it was another 6 years and I painted it back cream again, but every time we thought, you know, have we heard this right? Is this the right thing for us to do? Is this, you know, where God is taking us? There was one time when we were really, really thinking, have we made a mistake? And the very next day, a magazine came through our door which said focus on Nepal and a big picture of a Nepalese child. And there was another time when there was a huge spread on the need in Nepal in the Sunday Times. So we just kept focus. We really felt that's where God was leading us. And every time we doubted that, he definitely sent us a very clear message that that was, you know, where we were supposed to go. So after a very long 6-year wait, it was in December, actually 2010, when I sat at my desk at the leprosy mission at work, and an email came from the head of the leprosy mission in Nepal, and his name is Shveka Kandel, and he is such an amazing man of God, and he's now part of our family, and he stands in the gap for my daughter where she hasn't got any family. But anyway, he sent us a picture, and you can imagine after a 6-year wait, and the top of the email was like, this is your daughter. And I feel quite emotional now even talking about it. And there was this picture of this little girl, she was 8 months old, and then nothing again from December. And then in June we had another email which came through from the Nepali authorities that said, you need to come out within the next 4 weeks if you want to adopt from Nepal. And she was the very last child to come out of Nepal before they closed the doors. Since then, basically forever. And God really undertook for us. We had a special letter of dispensation to travel from Michael Gove. So many things just conspired together to make it happen for us. It was a very difficult time the first few days. This little baby at 16 months hadn't really ever had any solid food. She'd only just had like a very thick milk. She was so badly malnourished, no hair. She'd never seen a man before. She was absolutely terrified, particularly of my husband and of us, new smells and new language, and it was so difficult for her. But just step by step, she started making sort of movements that she was going to come to me, until eventually she just came onto my chest, and she sat there and she looked at me for 10 minutes. I'm going to cry now, sorry. And she just looked at me and she fell asleep. And my husband just cried, because for 6 years he had prayed that God would bind my new child's heart to mine and mine to hers. And it's such a lovely story that we were at the hospital back at Anandaban less than a week later. And she was there with my husband laughing, and he was blowing raspberries on her tummy. And, you know, as you do with a baby. And one of the volunteers at the hospital said, you know what, Louise, it's taken you 6 years to adopt that little girl and 6 days for her to adopt you. Just a real lovely story of God's undertaking in so many special ways.
Such a moving story, Louise. Yeah. I can understand that even after some years, it would still touch you as deeply.
Yeah, it does.
How do you talk to your little girl about her previous life?
We've been very open from day one. There's pictures of Nepal and her life before she came to us, which was only 16 months, all over the house. She is so proud to be a Nepali girl, and she's very proud of her heritage, you know, and she will talk about it. We're very fortunate to have Shveka and his family at Anandaban. So we went back when she was 7 and basically moved into the community. So it wasn't like going and staying in a hotel and looking at it from outside. We went back to her orphanage. She was up till late at night one night sorting out pencil cases. So everybody had pencils and pens and toys. And we took loads of things in, which I know, you know, hasn't helped those children in a long term way. But just for a short period of joy, we were able to do something. And I have gone back nearly every year to the orphanage just to see how I can help. But she's very proud of her heritage. We're part of a Nepali community, a small one in the UK as well. She keeps saying, when are we going to go back? So I really hope that it will be, COVID permitting, towards the end of this year.
Now you have another adopted child.
I do. So yes, I have a very mixed family. And that's a lovely story actually too, in which Marika was involved. After we'd adopted Marika, I wasn't sure if I wanted to have another child. But we put our names on the adoption register and we just thought, well, I didn't go chasing anything, but we just thought, if God's going to do something, he will. And Marika was 3 at the time, and we were on holiday actually in Spain. And we just passed a little monastery, and as tourists we went in, and she said, Mummy, let's say a prayer. So I said, okay, what are we going to pray for? And she said, Dear Lord, please will you send me a little brother? Get emotional. again now. Sorry. And then the very next day we had an email come through from Ipswich Social Services, nowhere near where I live, to say there's a little boy that they've got and he's of mixed heritage. He's actually half Afghan and half Lithuanian. And because we'd been able to manage, that's not the right word, but you know what I mean, a child of a different heritage, would we consider taking this little boy? And so I thought, well, that's good, isn't it? I can't say no. And that was in the October, and by the February he was with us. So yeah, another amazing story actually. And it's so nice when they're fighting. I always say to Marika, you prayed for him. Sometimes I feel a little bit bad for Finn, because we talk about Nepal an awful lot at home, because obviously that's one of the countries that I work in, and the leprosy mission doesn't work in Afghanistan or Lithuania, so it's been harder for me to kind of bring that to life for him. But actually Finn has started asking questions, so we're actually going to go to Lithuania at the end of this month for 2 days, so that he can actually see the country that's where his heritage is, even though his mother was in the UK. But we do have contact with birth mum, so yeah, if Finn wants that, that's something that we will encourage later. Yeah,
inspirational, moving, and of course there is only one hymn that we can play, isn't there, at the end of this conversation.
Yes, thank you.
O Lord my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the works thy hand hath made, I see the stars, I hear the mighty thunder, thy power throughout the universe displayed. Then sings my soul, my Saviour God, to thee. How great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Saviour God, to thee. How great thou art, how great thou art. And when I think that God his Son not sparing sent him to die, I scarce can take it in, that on the cross my burden gladly bearing, he bled and died to take away my sin. There sings my soul, my Saviour God, to thee. How great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Saviour God, to thee. How great thou art, how great thou art. Of acclamation and take me home, what joy shall fill my heart. Then shall I bow in a humble adoration and there proclaim, my God, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, how great thou art, how great thou art. Then sings my soul, my Saviour God, to thee. How great thou art, how great thou art.
Thank you to Louise Timmins, Head of Fundraising at the Leprosy Mission, sharing her story of love, trust and patience that brought her children Marika and Finn into her life. And the last word today, it's Russ on romance.
They say that romance is dead. I beg to dither. Sorry, I meant to say differ, but actually dither is more accurate. You see, I don't think romance is actually dead. It's just been left in a state of confusion. Wasn't it Shakespeare who said, "Love is a many splendid thing"? And we all went, "Yes, love, many splendors, that kind of thing," without really having a clue what he was on about. Because it's quite hard to analyse. Love is. I remember as a teenager going weak at the knees following a disco, where the conversation between me and the young lady I was keen on consisted mainly of the words, "yes, no, sometimes," and "what?" We'd swapped addresses and I'd written her a letter. Yes, a letter. Nowadays it'd be texts every 5 minutes with smileys. As I recall, I offered to lend her my ELO album, and she wrote back to say she already had a boyfriend with a car and parents with a villa in Spain. So the burgeoning romance dissolved into Mr. Blue Sky thinking. Valentine's Day always used to be an occasion for much hilarity. I'm convinced my friends always used to invent mythical girlfriends and send themselves cards. I tended to mess things up a bit by getting the girl's address wrong or sending a card with my name on it rather than "from your mysterious admirer" or something cool and intriguing. At the end of the day, we all want to know we're loved and to be able to give love too. The good thing is that whatever the state of your relationships, whether romance is alive and well or sat shivering and coughing in a corner, we are all loved by God. He accepts us as we are and offers us a fresh start, no matter how much of a fool we've been in the past. Jesus may have been betrayed with a kiss, but he's never stopped loving us. That's one reason to be very cheerful.
Thank you, Russ Bravo. And we finish now with, as usual, a look at our notice board. You're warmly invited to a service at Abbeylands this afternoon at 3 o'clock. It'll be led by Reverend Steve Ingrell. And this evening, Mr. Gareth Moore will lead the service in Sandygate Chapel, and that service starts at 6:30. Looking to the week ahead, and on Tuesday the 15th, there's a coffee morning in Port Erin Methodist Church from 10 till 11:30. And on Thursday the 17th, it's time for another Tabor on Thursday. This is in Port St Mary Methodist Church and starts at 7:30 this Thursday evening. And it's all about the space industry. There's no need to book. Admission payable on the door is £7 and it includes light refreshments. St Thomas's Church in Finch Road, here in the heart of Douglas, is famous for its hospitality. So if you're in town on a Friday morning, why not pop into St Thomas's for coffee and a chat? There's a coffee morning in St Thomas's every Friday from 10:30 onwards. The Andreas Film Club will be open for business again this Friday evening, the 18th. The film club meets in Andreas Parish Church, and the film showing on Friday is Doolittle, first released in 2020. Doors open at 6 o'clock, with the film starting at 6:30 and running for just under 2 hours. Entry is free, but you must sign the register in Andreas stores prior to the 18th. And don't delay, because there are only 50 spaces available. And when you sign in at the Andreas stores, you'll get your token for a free hot dog on the film night itself. There'll also be a tuck shop open for drinks and snacks before the film starts. That's all in Kirk Andreas, the parish church in Andreas, on Friday the 18th. And finally, a look ahead to next Sunday. And the popular Mariners services will resume next Sunday, the 20th of February. However, at the request of the hosts, the venue has been changed from the Abbey Church to St Mark's Church, but the service will start at its usual time of 6:30, and the preacher next Sunday will be Canon Brian Kelly. So that's the Mariners in St Mark's Church next Sunday evening, with, as always, supper and community hymn singing afterwards, and a warm welcome for everyone. And that's all that we've time for now. But I'll be back later, so do please join me if you can, tonight at 9 o'clock for Sundown, a rich mix of easy listening music to round off your weekend. And do please email me if you've got items for the notice board or you'd like to request a favourite hymn to be included in a future programme. My email address is judithleigh@manxradio.com. So, till whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning. The Nation Station.